League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
This podcast contains strong language and adult themes from the outset. Finding the funny. Finding the funny.
With Ruth and Ange, finding the funny. Right there, Ange.
Right there, mate. How are we doing?
Good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. I mean, I say yeah, not bad. I've had one of those, like, really shitty mornings.
Oh, no. What's happened? Yeah. Lay it on me.
Oh, it's just, you know, it's just work shit. The generic work shit of a Monday morning.
Yeah.
And then you add into that, you know, kids back to school, so you're doing all that shit. You know, and actually, I think, because I normally do my Peloton wanks of a morning, and I've not done that this morning, so.
And so that's,
I think it's just
had...
all... It's thrown me off kilter, mate. It's thrown me off kilter.
Well, later on in the show, we've got a guest.
We do, yes.
We are really, really excited to have Zara, who's going to be talking to us about her termination for medical reasons. It is quite a difficult chat.
Mm-hmm.
So just a little warning at the top. We talk a lot about grief and the grief and the loss that Zara has experienced, both through her termination and also her reoccurrent miscarriage. But I don't know if you know this, Ange, but this is going out this week, because this week is actually National Infertility Awareness Week.
I did not know that, Pat.
So all of us in this shitty crew,
yeah,
we get our own bloody week.
Get a week of it, mate.
We get a week. We get a week.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I'd
it's not
give
really
it up.
The week you want.
No, yeah. I'd give up week for for not being part of the shittest club ever.
You'd give up this week for 51 weeks of fertility.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. I wish my fucking body could work, but alas, it does not.
Alas, you are just given this week.
Given this week.
You've got this week.
Yeah. So we thought it would be a good conversation to have this week on the basis that it's National Infertility Awareness Week.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, coming up in our Don't Go There section, it's a great conversation. It's brilliant.
Zara is
fantastic, but it is a difficult chat. So just for people to be aware. I had somebody message me this week, a new listener, and they said... Why does Ange call you Patty? I mean, I absolutely love it, but I can't understand it. I wonder whether that it's an ab fab explanation or whether there's a relation there to ab fab. So for new listeners, which we, you know, we've gained a few. So hi, welcome. It's nice to have you along.
Yes, welcome.
Ange basically doesn't call anyone in her life by their name. So I think I've probably had... in excess of 10 nicknames since I was born, ranging from Rudy Miller. I mean, at one point, Ange went through a time of calling me Miller Reed's a Diamond Geezer. Jimmy Moulin.
So,
and for some reason, your guess is as good as ours. We've landed on fucking Patty.
Patty.
So that's it. That's it now. Patty.
I mean, I can't even actually give an explanation.
No.
As to why.
No. Anyway, look, shall we?
Let's do the big questions.
Amazing.
Quite nice.
Sometimes I feel like I don't know what to say. I'm speechless. When that performance comes in, it gets me
in the fields.
We had a big question this week from Nikki on the gram, and it says, do you have a point in your cycle where you wouldn't be upset if your partner left you?
Well, I'm in it right now.
Oh,
I've been in
God,
it for about a
you're
week.
In the you're in the throes.
Oh, I mean, for anyone who was on our Instagram live last week,
oh my
full God, extreme.
The full of wrath of Ange.
Yeah.
I'm sort of semi in it, and it was interesting because last night when Matthew and I went up to bed, I basically said to him, like, I was boiling hot. I was so hot. Oh. And you know, when you're sort of like either ovulating or just hormones in general, like, you're so fucking hot.
Yeah.
I was so hot, right?
Yeah.
And I got into bed and Matthew kept wanting to play with my hair. And I kept going, no, get off. No. Like, I was like right on the edge of the bed and he kept kind of moving over. And then I turned around to him and I said, Matthew, I am in the winter time of my cycle. Spring. Yeah. So, you know, some people do it by seasons.
Do they?
Yeah. So like, so lots of people talk about, like, I knew this would absolutely get you 100%, which is why I'm sharing it. But some people will talk about, like, you know, you have like a spring summer part of your cycle where you're kind of up for touchy feely, you're like happier. It's like, woo, no hell.
They call it their spring cycle, summer
like
cycle.
Spring summer part of their cycle, yeah. And then you move into your autumn winter, which is like hibernation. Don't come near me. Don't even put your leg on my side of the bed.
Right.
If you packed your bags and left now, Matthew, in the dead of a winter night, I wouldn't give a shit. I wouldn't give a shit.
I have never heard people calling it.
So some people will. So I basically turned around to him and I said, I am in the winter part of my cycle. What do we do in winter? We wrap up warm. We keep ourselves to ourselves. We don't go out on dark nights. We are happy to sit in and cry over a movie. Get your leg off my side of the bed, to the point where he stopped and then he rolled over. And I was like, are you okay? He said, well, God, moving my leg, if that's enough to piss you off, we really have got a problem. That was sort of how last night
finished. Yeah. I become an absolute cow for about a week. So it's like 3 or 4 days of build up.
Yeah.
Like, don't even try and have any kind of conversation with me.
Don't go there.
Come near me.
Yeah.
I will smash you in the face.
Yeah. Do not go there.
So it's like a 3 or 4 day build up.
Yeah.
Then, you know, Brenda comes along and then we've got another sort of two, three, four days of sort of general shit.
So you're sort of winter, or you're still in your autumn winter vibes.
I don't think we need to. I
think it's helped me to understand my cycle, and I'm not going to have you take it away from me, actually. So back up. Brother room.
I am not going to be saying to Ian, I'm in my autumn winter phase of my
cycle. I am. That's fine. You don't have to.
Fucking ridiculous, that.
See, she's very much in the throes of the autumn winter part of
the really am. I actually think they have it pretty good with me, to be honest.
Oh my God. Do you?
Yes, Ange? I do. I'll tell you for why, right?
Oh, okay. In our Don't Go There section next week, guys, we've got Ian on. Ian's going to come on and tell us all the fucking times he's not allowed to go there, but apparently he has it quite good with Ange.
He does, because, right, I would say, so let's go over a month. 3 weeks out of the four, right. I am fucking amazing to be around. Okay.
Okay.
3 out of the 4 weeks, I am the life and soul of this house. I'm the life and soul of a party. I am the life and soul. In fact, anyone who comes across me in those 3 weeks literally says to me, "Ange, you are the life and soul." Right?
I'm speechless.
For one week.
Yeah, this is difficult to test out. I'm gonna talk privately to Joel, Ian, and
I'm okay with that.
I'm gonna bring it back.
I'm okay with that because I know,
you know,
that is what it's like. So I think actually for that 1 week, they just have to accept I am going to be shitting nightmare.
I think Asbo Ange now has been changed for Arrogant Ange. So on that 1 week, she'll be hashtag Asbo Ange. The other 3 weeks, I'm fucking life and soul. Oh, here she is, hashtag arrogant Ange.
I don't know if it's arrogance. I think it's just
self-assured confidence.
Absolutely bloody wonderful Ange.
Absolutely bloody wonderful
bloody
Ange.
Wonderful Ange.
Yeah. So What's been getting on your shitting tits, Ange?
Right, now. So the thing that gets on my shitting tits is men in flip-flops.
Serious?
Yes. I actually saw...
think a guy in a flip-flop is alright.
No, I...
What is it with men in flip-flops then?
I just don't think they should wear them.
Why?
Because I just think a lot of the time, their feet, men's feet are quite disgusting, aren't they?
There is...
Hairy toes. They've got hairy toes.
Yeah. Not all men, but there is a
lot
high...
of men have hairy toes and they'll have disgusting toenails.
Yeah,
them.
No, there is a sense. There is, I can see that there's a spectrum of toes.
Yes.
And probably a lot of men, not all men, but probably a lot of men are at the other, at the spectrum of the toe spectrum that you wouldn't want to be seeing on the regs.
Absolutely.
And so when they're flipping and flopping around.
Yes, it just.
It's like, okay.
It draws your attention to the feet.
How do you feel about a sandal? How do you feel about a sandal?
What, on men? Or yeah.
No, on men.
No.
Not even like a sandal that Mal might wear, which is like a leather with a big leather bit over the top of it. Covers quite a lot of the foot, actually.
I only think men should wear proper, trainers or sort of Converse-type shoe.
Right, okay.
A fully covered foot, right. I think, is what men should go with. Okay. Unless you're at the beach, then you can have your flip-flop or your sandal.
Then no holes barred.
Yeah, you can go for it then, because just everyone's got everything out.
Yeah, get your feet out.
Yeah.
Get your shirt off.
Yeah.
Wave it around if you
get
want.
Get your little budgie smugglers on.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Get budgie smugglers. They annoy me.
Yeah.
You know, talking on that vibe of what men should and shouldn't wear.
Yeah.
Like, what is that
why
about?
Why would you choose to wear something like that?
Just get yourself a good boxer-based trunk.
Yeah.
It's not hard.
You don't need to be showing the whole lot, do you?
No, it's not hard, but... We don't need to see, I don't think we need to see any guy in a Speedo unless they're racing. Unless they're racing.
Racing.
And it's for aerodynamic reasons.
Yes, yes, yes. So you're like Michael Phelps's.
Yes. We don't need to see John from Two Doors Down at Little Hampton Beach in the Budgie Smugglers. We don't need that.
Really called in the buggies.
We don't need to see John getting into a buggy, okay?
Well, we don't need to see John trying to smuggle a buggy in his pants.
I think John thinks he's got a buggy in his pants. That's why he's in the Budgie Smugglers.
Yeah. I'll actually be interested to know what people think about the flip-flop.
Well, let's ask. Let's ask. Guys, should men, are you with Ange? I'm sort of on the fence. I don't really have an opinion, but should men wear flip-flops? Mm. There's loads of ways you can get in touch with us.
There is.
Find us both on Instagram. I'm at Ruth Corden.
And I'm at Ange Corden. You can find us on Facebook. Just search Finding the Funny Podcast. Or you can send us an email. hello@ruthcorden.com. So, let me know. Are you in the... Flip-flop yes, flip-flop no count.
I'm going to do a poll again this week on Instagram, a little bit like we did with date night. So we want to hear from you, get in touch with us, but I'm also going to cover it via a pollage.
Nice work, Pat. Well done. Yeah. Yeah.
So in our Don't Go There section this week, we're really privileged actually to be tackling a subject that is often not talked about at all, which is around parents or women who have to have terminations for medical reasons. Zara, I hate that it's called that. I feel like there's should be a better word, but Zara has joined us this week, who has experienced having a termination for medical reasons. Zara has also undergone her own IVF journey. She is a mum to a little boy called Jax, who is incredibly cute, but has then also gone on to lose a pregnancy, but has really fought in general, actually, to grow your family, haven't you, Zara? So
yeah,
I just want us to hear from you today, your journey. We've got some questions for you, but where did your kind of journey to like grow your family start?
So I have endometriosis, so I always knew I was going to probably struggle to have children.
Yeah.
And it was my GP, actually, who suggested I kind of get on with it if I didn't, you know, want to go down the IVF route. She said, get on with it and hopefully it should all be okay. And that wasn't the case at all. It was probably about 9-10 months before I was referred for IVF. And luckily, our first cycle worked, resulted in our 5-year-old son. It was awful. I had really bad treatment. I had severe OHSS. I had emergency stomach surgery at 10 weeks pregnant. I was in hospital for 3 months. So the whole process was, it was pretty petrifying, but somehow we ended up with our son, who,
for those who don't know what OHSS is, do you want to explain, just explain what that is?
Yeah, so it's where they overstimulate your ovaries. So your ovaries are meant to be between 3 and 4 centimeters, and mine were 15 centimeters each. So they burst and they started leaking fluid, and I woke up one day and had fluid under my lungs and couldn't breathe. So it was pretty awful. And
Is that happening to your ovaries? Is that because of the drugs they have to give you through IVF?
Exactly. Okay, fine. Yes. And you're more at risk if you have polycystic ovaries because you have more follicles there to start with.
Right.
And, you know, I should never have been stimulated as much as I was. Mm-hmm. And I certainly should never have had an embryo put back in, because if you do fall pregnant, it exasperates all the symptoms and everything. So, you know, I had 5 dashes in an ambulance to hospital, and on the third time they said to Lex they weren't sure I was going to make it until the morning. And it is, you know, it's quite a serious thing that so many clinics fail to tell patients about. So it was petrifying. So when we kind of wanted to add to the family and give Jax a sibling, all that was in the back of our mind. It was a really big decision for us to make. But all I kept saying was, nothing can be as bad as that. You know, little did I know what was to come. But we went into it and kind of, I put my big girl knickers on and just thought, right, I know what I want. And this is the only way that I can give him a sibling. So we went for another transfer. I had a frozen embryo. So I had a frozen embryo transfer, which in comparison is simple, because I actually did no drugs. I basically just had to take an ovulation test at home, tell them when it was positive, and go in for a transfer.
Okay.
So it was so simple up until this point. Yeah. And then we got a positive test, and it all felt, to be honest, it all felt too good to be true. But you kind of think, you're thinking that way as a self-protection thing.
Yes. 'Cause
you keep thinking, you know, you just want to keep a bit of your hope back in case it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
But everything was great. All the scans were looking great. He was waving and kicking at every scan. Wow. I was past the, you know, the safety mark of 12 weeks, which they, for some reason, give you as a benchmark. And then we went for a scan one day and they just said, we have found something, and come back in a couple of weeks and we'll see if it's resolved itself. Which I was on my own when they told me, because they'd previously told me everything looked fine and they'd sent Lex back downstairs, which I don't know why they did that.
No.
And then they called me back on my own, and it's just everything from the way I was told to the way it was then dealt with to the way that they then started calling my baby the fetus. Everything from that moment was just, it was just awful, to be honest. And I don't, looking back now, I don't know how I got through it, but you do just get a superhuman strength from somewhere, because you have to get through it. You have no choice. So I went for a private scan the next day. I couldn't wait 2 weeks at all. And I mean, I don't know why they told me to wait 2 weeks, because it was so evident that what my baby had, he was never going to be coming home with us. It was so clear. And then it was just, you know, he put his hand on my leg and he said, I'm going to tell you exactly what I see. I've sat in your husband's position and I've been the father at a scan, you know, expecting great news. Mm. And I've sat here as a sonographer and I'm just going to tell you black and white what I see. Mm. And he said, your baby is incompatible with life.
Oh, oh my Lord.
And I had never heard of that term. I had never... And I like to think that I was quite knowledgeable with all things fertility and pregnancy because I think going through IVF, you have to become a bit of an expert.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I had never, I never knew there was another way to lose a baby apart from a miscarriage or a stillbirth.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just kept saying to him, but I don't get what you mean. My baby is alive. How do I end that pregnancy? And, you know, I wasn't taking anything in at all what he was telling me. But I just remember Googling, going home and Googling about it and seeing that there was something called a termination, which is where you, not willingly, but you, you reach a decision for the best for you and your baby to end their life. And, yeah, it was a punch in the stomach.
And were you on your own?
No, so Lex came with me the next day. And, I mean, he went to pieces.
Was this last year?
Did
this
was it last
2018.
Okay. Yeah. How do you even begin to, like, you know, start that conversation? I mean, you know, obviously being told that your baby is incompatible with life, like, and your response of, but my baby's alive and, you know, has a heartbeat and is a living, breathing baby. How do you, and that's why I sort of hate this term of termination for medical reasons. I just, it just feels so clinical to me. It feels so like, well, you've made that choice to terminate that baby. Like there is a choice in it. Like those couples go, oh, we're going to terminate this child when that isn't actually what has happened. You know, Jesse was unwell. He was incredibly unwell. Yeah. So how do you even begin to start those conversations as a couple? What happened after that scan?
Well, I sat up until 3 a.m. and just researching every single paper I could find. Right. And as soon as I saw there had never been any born survivors with body stalk anomaly, I knew what we were facing. And you do, you hold out that one piece of hope where you think, what if they've got that wrong? What if they just saw something and it was a shadow on the scan? You know, you're so hopeful. But we had 4 scans. I mean, there was no doubt at all how unwell. I mean, I don't know how much detail you want me to go into, but the only organ in his body was his little heart. Everything else, and his heart had dropped down to his stomach because there was nothing else to hold it in place. So it was, you know, he was very poorly. But then people reach these decisions when their babies are still compatible with life, but they've been given an awful diagnosis.
Yeah.
Or even I had somebody on Instagram contact me, and again, I never knew this was a thing, that she had to terminate her completely healthy baby because she had cancer and she had to start emergency treatment.
Oh my God. Yeah, I've
forget. There's so many other ways.
Yeah, I've heard that a few times. In fact, someone, I don't actually know her, but sort of a friend of a friend had that exact thing happen to her because of her own kind of illness. There was no way they could kind of continue with the pregnancy because
I don't even know how you even start to process that.
I don't know how you've kind of processed it and gone through what you've gone through, Zara. It does absolutely,
I think the first thing that hits you when you're given the news and you're trying to reach that decision is you are obviously overwhelmed with guilt. And it's trying to work your way through that guilt and still try and come to quite a level-headed decision. Because whether, you know, I know what we did was for the right reason, but at the end of the day, I did still end his life. And even though I don't have guilt as such over doing that, it still hurts.
Oh man, Zara.
It still hurts.
I mean, the only thing I can even begin to sort of relate on some level is that I had a miscarriage. And but even that is, you know, that's, I didn't have to make a decision. That decision was made for me. However, you know, how much of that hurt me and however hard that was, I didn't have to make a decision to do that. And I think that is ultimately the thing here, like you say, the kind of guilt, the pain, the heartache that is all wrapped up in you having to kind of make a choice. And that's
and you carry that with that you carry forever. That with you forever. So, you know, I'm very lucky that I can access counselling, and I did the entire way through. But it's still, I have worked through it a lot, but it's still, you know, we've just moved house and we're so happy and we've had the happiest week. Yet Saturday I spent half the day crying because I felt so happy. And it's trying to navigate, and it's trying to allow yourself to know that you can feel two things at once. You can be incredibly happy. But it doesn't mean that I've forgotten about Jessie, and I've got over it. I will never get over it. But it's trying to navigate life after going through something like that, I think.
And life after loss is, and parenting, I think, after loss is such a complex situation to navigate. And I also think, you know, added into that, perhaps the kind of grief around secondary infertility, you know, that was a sibling that you had planned for Jax, and, you know, that longing to give your child who you love more than anything a sibling, that just compounds and adds, doesn't it, to the complexity of
it does,
of sifting through that grief.
You know, I was pregnant enough that he knew I was quite clearly pregnant, and we'd spoken about the sibling and how exciting he was. So a lot of the guilt afterwards was because I felt I'd failed him. I felt I'd failed him to give him what he was expecting. And it's really hard. And another thing I felt so difficult to kind of work through was the lack of support there is. I mean, it's quite frightening, to be honest. It's really isolating. You know, that from the very start, when I was given the news, I was then sent away to an abortion clinic and had to try and book it in myself. And I was pregnant and, you know, feeling all the feelings, and sat Googling how to transport a dead baby's body to a hospital to try and get it from the abortion clinic, and trying to work out how cold it must be, you know, to preserve it. And then you kind of, I kept catching myself and thinking, when you're writing the baby, I'm on about my son. And it would hit me. And it was, you know, it's awful. And I really am working hard to get that changed. No woman should be sent away to an abortion clinic.
No way.
That was actually something I was going to ask you, Zara. Given the awful experience you've had to go through, and having that kind of first-hand experience of that, have things changed since this happened to you in 2018? Are there now better processes for that, or is it literally still exactly the same?
It's the same.
You know?
I think COVID obviously put a bit of a spanner into the works. We were just starting to get a bit of momentum, and then obviously everything shut down, and it's not deemed, you know, vital. So it'll be put right down to the bottom of the pile again. But I think there's more support out there, because I've worked hard with Tommy's and Petals and Ark to get that support. But prior to that, Ark were great. But apart from that, there was such little support. And I said to Lex, I said, it's funny that if I'd have let the pregnancy progress and Jessie had have died a few weeks later, or he'd have died at birth, the support we would have received would have been vastly different.
Totally different.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have been judged. We wouldn't have had that stigma attached to us. And there is still such a stigma. And I still find myself, you know, I can come on here and say, oh, I don't care if people want to judge me. But I think I do, because I still find myself saying to people, I had a termination for medical reasons. Like, I'll quickly follow it up, and then I want to tell them why.
The whole story.
Well, that term, termination, is so loaded, isn't it? Like, abortion is such a loaded subject that, you know, for whatever reason, we shouldn't have to justify, you know, people shouldn't have to justify their life choices. But when you have been put in the position where you've been told, look, Jessie is not going to live, the complexity of dealing with that and managing that is so hard. You talked about him having body stalk anomaly. What is that?
So it's non-genetic. They simply said it's a blip. So in development, we start as two halves and kind of join. Mm-hmm. And there was a tiny second of a blip in that development, and his two halves just didn't join. So everything developed, apart from his heart, everything developed outside. But facially, he was so perfect. He was beautiful. And I'll never forget in the last, they were so kind, the hospital. Once we'd got to the fetal medicine unit, you know, the people who do deal with this, they were so kind. We had, a really long scan, 3D. Mm. They played us his heartbeat over and over. And he was just perfect.
And do you things now to sort of mark his life? Like, have you kind of made sort of things to happen? You know, even with my miscarriage, I still, on the date I should have had that, I still think of that, you know, 7th of November, that date comes and goes. But, I sort of think for you, it's a far greater loss you've been through. And like, I just wonder if there are things you do to kind of remember Jesse and mark the life that he did have.
Yeah, we do. On the day of the termination, actually, we always go and release a balloon up on in Greenwich Park. Jackson calls it Jesse Hill, so we go up there and we release a balloon. And actually this year Jack's asked if he should send his scooter up because he might want some toys in heaven.
Oh my god.
So it's just the simple minds of children, isn't it?
Oh, I know.
I mean, he'll always be part of our family.
Yeah, of course.
And I feel guilty because Jax has started school and he is the only child in his class with no sibling, which he tells me daily. I know. But I feel guilty when people say, how many kids have you got?
Mm.
And I say one, because it's the simple answer. You do always feel bad, and I always apologise. I'm like, sorry. sorry about that. But yeah, I do. You do. It's knowing who to share that with.
Because it's such a personal thing, isn't it? Yeah. You know, it's not something you want everybody to know about. So,
How, you know, obviously grief and loss in every capacity has an impact on us. Emotionally, mentally, our relationships. How did it impact you kind of after it happened, and how is it kind of now? Like, how did it impact your family relationships, your relationships perhaps with Lex, you know, your mental health, and how did you manage that? Obviously you've mentioned some amazing charities, Tommy's, Petals, ARC, brilliant places to go to get help and support around grief and baby loss, but how did you manage it personally and in your own relationships?
It was tough, I'm not going to lie. Lex and I deal very differently with grief. He sweeps it under the carpet and works. Yeah. I mean, he works nonstop anyway, but he loves his job. So he had something that he loved that he could throw himself into. Yeah. And I felt for a long time afterwards that I was just there sweeping up the pieces.
Mm.
And I felt we were so far apart. And there was a part of me that thought, well, you obviously didn't love him like I did. And of course he did, but we also have to realise that people grieve differently.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it hit Lex a few months afterwards. We were on the train. Mm. We tried to go away for a weekend, ended up turning around and coming back because we both couldn't stop crying. But he had a panic attack on the train and he'd never had, he doesn't deal with anything like that. He's fine. Mm. But it just hit him.
Yeah.
And he went for counselling after that, only a couple of sessions, but it just felt enough for him to offload to someone that wasn't me. Yeah. And I think that was the issue. And I think that is the issue many times with men is they don't want to burden us with it because we're quite clearly dealing with a lot already.
A lot. Yeah.
And he didn't really have anyone else to turn to or anyone he felt he could it's such a specific thing. And especially friends, you know, haven't been through it. You think, well, they're not going to get it. I'll just keep quiet.
Yeah.
But I no problem is ever solved by keeping it inside. I think it will always come out, whether months or years later.
Yeah. And talking is so important, isn't it? It's so cathartic to, talk about Jesse, to talk about him. And like Ange said, to remember his life. That is so important, you know, when loss happens, we have to keep that memory alive. And that is at every stage of life, you know, from, you know, losing a baby before they're born, after they're born, and, you know, adults, friends, all of that stuff. The only way we do that is by talking and by keeping that memory alive.
That's it.
We did have one question in for you about somebody asked how their friend has just actually gone through this exact same thing. And this person that messaged me has never experienced baby loss, has never kind of had any issue growing their family. And they were just sort of saying they feel at a complete loss, really, of how to help. What advice would you give around support that people can offer to people going through this, or baby loss in general, I suppose?
I think the messages I still remember to this day when we were going through it were the messages that said, I don't know what to say, but I'm sorry.
Mm.
And it's just knowing people, but nobody knows what to say when you've gone through that. No. Nobody, you overanalyze, should I say this or no, you know, they'll take that the wrong way. Just by reaching out and saying, I don't know what to say, this is shit, but I am here for you if you need me. And also, if you're talking about baby loss, if your friend has named their baby, please use that name.
Mm.
Because that means the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really does.
Yeah, lots of people say that, especially around the baby loss thing, that, you know, saying their name if they've got to the point in the pregnancy, or if they've kind of died after birth, you know, using their name, repeating their name is actually, and I think, you know, before I became more sort of versed in kind of this sort of world through my own journey, although I've never lost a baby, I think I probably wouldn't have done that. I would have maybe shied away from using their name, and I don't know what that's about, but I think I would have felt maybe uncomfortable, like does that person want to be reminded or hear that baby's name? But I've learned that actually it's quite comforting.
It is. And I think sometimes as well, people, especially if they've lost early on, they feel that that doesn't count, or, you know, they shouldn't, it's not as bad as someone who's lost further on. That's not true. There's no there's no scale for grief. I mean, it does. I've had 3 miscarriages since the termination, and I'm bloody sad about every single one of them.
Of course.
You know, the babies didn't die in the same way Jessie did, but it doesn't mean that they're irrelevant to me. Each one has mattered. And I think you just need to realise that every single loss is valid, no matter how far along you were.
Yeah. And how are things now, Sarah? Like, how are you, and how is life, and how is family, and kind of, yeah, where are you at on your kind of process to want to kind of grow your family?
Well, we have no embryos left. I had my last transfer in September and used them all up.
Right.
Although on the day I'd found out that my last clinic had lost one 5 years ago, and
had
just stored
that.
An empty vial for 5 years.
Oh,
so that was
God.
I actually felt more grief over that, honestly, because I felt that embryo didn't even get a bloody chance.
Get a chance.
Yeah, that's honestly, I felt really kind of floored by that.
I actually still can't believe that. When we had messages about that back, I actually still think, how can they store an empty pot for 5 years? And that baby
wasn't even in there.
Gone.
Unbelievable. I know.
Unbelievable.
It was a real shocker, to be honest. But I'm also glad that all of the embryos have been used up. Obviously, I wish one of them had have worked.
Sure. Yes.
But I don't feel they're now hanging over us. There was no way I was ever going to leave them in the freezer and not use them.
No, yeah.
So I do feel freer. And, you know, we've just moved. And I do feel it's a new chapter for us, which I don't think we realised how much we needed that. You know, 3 recurrent miscarriages is really tough on top of, you know, the termination before that. And I think it had just really pushed us into the ground, and we didn't realise that.
No.
And so we're doing well, and we are so thankful to have our 5-year-old. I mean, it's made me realise that even more. And I guess I'm always hoping for a miracle, but I'm very aware that's very unlikely to happen. So I'm just thankful for what I've got, and
It's traumatic, isn't it? And when we experience trauma, you know, you can't walk through a house fire and not get burnt. And that is essentially what has happened. And when we experience that ongoing, you know, multiple layers of trauma, one does have to, you know, sort that stuff out. And I often liken it to carrying a backpack, which sounds a bit weird, but you know, when you carry a backpack and it's not packed rightly, it digs into you and it sticks out and it's uncomfortable and it becomes really difficult to manage. And actually what we have to do is unpack it. It doesn't mean we unpack it and leave bits behind, but we repack it in a way that it sits comfortably on our back and we say, oh, that thing only digs in now every now and again. It's not constantly like digging into my sides. When we have to look at trauma that we've been through, we have to repack it. And we have to put our backpack on in a way that feels more comfortable. Not to say we've forgotten about those things that we went through and they're not an important part of our story, but we carry it in a better way.
Yeah, I like that.
Well, look, Zara, thank you so much for firstly, I mean, I put a box up and so many people said, not a question, but just thanks, Zara, so much for speaking out about this. Mm-hmm. You know, so many accounts left messages in that box just saying Zara's helped me more or the things that Zara's talked about. So if you've experienced baby loss or anything that Zara has talked about, we mentioned three charities, ARC, Petals and Tommy's, all doing incredible work to help and support. Zara has her own Instagram, which is Little Norfolk Cottage. Beautiful cottage in Norfolk that she rents out as well. It's gorgeous. But also does talk on her own social media about this. So if this is something you're struggling with, you know, go and check out Zara's Instagram. But thank you, Zara, so much for just being so willing amazing. To talk about this. Yeah, and just so willing to talk about this really, really deeply personal, deeply painful subject. And there's always a cost when we share this stuff. So, you know, thank you so much for being willing to
I remember when I was going through it, I couldn't find anyone. And if someone just finds my account and it gives them a bit of comfort, then it's worth it to me.
So we're at the end of another episode. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks again to Zara for joining us. Just again, Tommy's, ARC and Petals are all charities that support around the area of baby loss. There is also a brilliant book by a woman on Instagram called Elle. It's called Tell Me His Name. And that is also a brilliant book, which covers the kind of grief of baby loss, so I'd also recommend checking that out. You can find us both on Instagram. I'm at Ruth Corden
and I'm at Anna Corden, and you can find us on Facebook, just search Finding the Funny Podcast, or you can send us an email, hello@ruthcorden.com.
We love hearing from you. We always love it.
We do.
But we'll be back next week with Lisa Riley.
Woohoo!
We will be here next week with Lisa, helping you to find more of the funny.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.